Blue Jays get 9 men to the plate in the ninth inning. They tally 3 times, but not nearly enough. Yankees in a runaway on a night where New York smashes 6 home runs. They put it to bed early, and they go on with a 20-6 win.
A shot, chipping away the puck as Anders Lee. He's got Eberle with him. Here's Lee. Eberle scores! And the New York Islanders have forced a 6th game in the Eastern Conference Final, thanks to Jordan Eberle.
Hey, Ziggy, I'm not wasting any time this morning. I was trying to come up with a way I could best express my opinion on the play of Derek Fisher last night in right field in the second inning, which turned a 1-0 Blue Jays lead on the strength of a Vladimir Guerrero Jr. opposite field home run on the top of the second into a 7-1 Blue Jays deficit en route to a 20-6 loss. And you know when you have to overpronounce the score so that people understand it, it's not good. I say 26. No, not the number 26. 22-6. That's also not 22-6.
I felt bad for Walker. I felt bad for Fisher as well. I can't imagine what it's like standing in the outfield during that and then the run back in to the dugout after. Those two things, it's not like other sports where you make the bad mistake and you can hide on the bench or the sidelines. In baseball, you're out there. Like, there's nowhere to go.
Derek Fisher was thanking, he wasn't thanking the good Lord for too much last night. He was thanking the good Lord that it's a pandemic and there are nobody in the seats. Because the Yankees bleacher creatures would have chewed him up and spat him out. But this is what the Blue Jays need to do with Derek Fisher.
See ya!
Little Michael K.
It was, I did feel bad for him, but at the same time when he pulled out his lineup card or his, what do you call those?
The wristband. The wristband with all the scouting reports on the heat.
There's got to be an official name for those things, but the first thing I thought of was I've literally lost the draw and have been sent to the minors in the NHL, and that looked like a plane ticket that I was like looking at for my row and my seat. And I was like, let's see, did they at least give me an aisle seat instead of a middle seat?
If I'm Mark Budzinski, the Blue Jays first base and outfield coach, the new Tim Leaper, I'm writing on that wristband scouting report tonight, it doesn't matter where you stand. It doesn't.
He gets
it
a surprise.
It doesn't.
He pulls it out mid-game. It says, yeah. It doesn't matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. If Derek Fisher is back in right field tonight, I'd start him on the left field foul line. Because it's probably more likely that if he has to take 1,000 steps to get to the ball and track it down and make a great play, he's going to make the catch. He's clearly got the yips. Ziggy, let's go back in history to a little more than a year ago. The Blue Jays got him in a trade with Houston for Aaron Sanchez and Joe Biagini. Effectively, there was a minor league outfielder in there as well, but that's not relevant. Aaron Sanchez, who is missing all of this season, having had serious shoulder surgery, in his first appearance for Houston, through the first 6 innings of a combined no-hitter. Derek Fisher's debut with the Blue Jays came in Baltimore. He played in right field, and he missed a fly ball hit right to him that then clunked him on the cheekbone. So there's something going on here. We know about the yips, a second baseman who can't throw the ball to first. I mean, the Simpsons made fun of that with Steve Sachs, right? Back in the day, the second baseman for the Dodgers and the Yankees in the 80s, he couldn't field a ground ball and throw it the 40 feet to first base. It was in his head. Chuck Knobloch of the New York Yankees had that around the turn of the century. There have been catchers in the past, Mackie Sasser, Giovanni Soto, who could not throw the ball back to the pitcher after receiving a pitch. They had to underhand it or roll it or do whatever.
Didn't Donaldson have it too? Didn't he have it for a little bit?
Josh Donaldson?
Yeah.
Oh, he couldn't throw from third to first. I think there's something going on with his shoulder. I think there was a problem with his shoulder that was causing that. We should get him on. See how many swear words he throws in between the actual words he uses in sentences. But I've never actually witnessed the yips fielding. Like, not throwing, that's a motion. Fielding the baseball. I think Derek Fisher is so deep in his own head, now he doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know to charge in on a line drive. He's playing it safe. He's playing it cautious. They can't put him back out there. Not because he needs to be punished, because you're trying to win baseball games. And there's a separate conversation to be had about Taijuan Walker having a complete and total nuclear meltdown, not being able to bail out his teammate. Fine. But that was a 5-out second inning. The New York Yankees are too good. You don't want to give them an extra out. You give them 2 extra outs and a half an inning, they're going to burn you. That set the tone for the entire night. And now you've got games every single day between now and the end of the regular season on Sunday the 27th, including 2 against the Philadelphia Phillies on Friday in a doubleheader. And you have already overextended your bullpen coming off an off day because you couldn't get any length out of your starter and you couldn't get effective relief work. That is as bad a start to this final 13-day stretch as the Blue Jays could possibly have imagined.
It's almost like Fisher is looking away as the ball approaches him. And I don't know if that's part of the yips, but it's almost like he loses concentration for the last second. I understand on the second one he missed. Okay, you're going towards the wall. I also thought he kind of bailed into the wall after to make it look good. I don't know if I was seeing stuff.
Oh, God.
I know I hate saying that about a guy. I don't like saying it. But
I mean, if he can't see the ball, maybe he can't see the wall.
No, I feel like he went into the wall on purpose after and then started the limp because he's got an issue with his quad, though, doesn't he? Or he's got a leg issue. I know he's got a leg issue, but it almost feels like he drops the ball, misses it, and then he runs an extra 3 steps and slams himself into the wall like, oh my God, I just missed this really tough catch in outfield. That's what it looked like to me.
I don't know. You just feel like death out there. I mean, you said it. You got 9 islands on a baseball field. In hockey, you got 1. That's the goaltender, typically. A defenseman can get undressed in a one-on-one or something and feel all alone, but in baseball, you can't get away from it. If there were 40,000 people in Yankee Stadium last night, Derek Fisher would have heard it all. You and I were talking yesterday morning about, and Josh Tolley, about cat calls at Fenway and
would have been bad.
In Yankee Stadium. I'm telling you.
I also think he could have got the other one. I know it was a bit of a line drive, but he's not charging that ball. So he had the miss too that were glaring, and then he also had another one. I think a lot of guys would have got that line drive.
Well, you're at that point, you're playing it safe, right?
But imagine he charges that and misses it. Then it's like
it's a triple or an inside the park home run. But here's the thing. And Dan Shulman commented on this. And by the way, Dan Shulman will join us at the top of the 7 o'clock hour, and we'll get into the Fisher situation. Dan Shulman commented on it on the broadcast last night, which is that there are people in the organization who believe in Derek Fisher. They believe in the offense. They look at the peripheral advanced metrics and statistics and data readings, and they see strong batted ball, lots of hard contact, launch angle, all of that stuff that probably the layperson doesn't pay much attention to. But let's be honest. You're in a pennant race. This guy cannot play in the outfield again.
See ya.
See ya. Michael Kay was saying a hell of a lot of that last night, too. The Yanks only hit 6 home runs in the game. But he can't be back out there. And sometimes the guys you really like don't work out. I still, in the middle of the night, could also be my age and fact that my bladder requires me to get up 2 or 3 times to pee, but in the middle of the night sometimes, I have nightmares about Socrates Brito, and I think back to Ross Atkins saying, and how many times have you heard this quote in hockey, Ziggy? We are intrigued by the handedness. Socrates Brito is a switch hitter, so they like the fact that he could hit from both sides of the plate and maybe make some platoon matchups a little bit easier on them. Well, that experiment lasted 2 or 3 months, or it felt like 2 or 3 months. It might have even been less than that. Sometimes the guys you really like, those statistical finding diamonds in the rough, don't work out. So far, Derek Fisher has not worked out. And that game last night, it would be one thing if they just went on and lost 7-1 and Taiwan Walker was able to get through 4 or 5 and Shun Yamaguchi a couple of innings. The fact you had to run through a significant chunk of your bullpen in the first game of a 13-day stretch heading toward the end of the season as you battle for playoff seeding. That was bad.
I think you do what Jeff Blair said. I think his idea was the best, is that you make him pitch, send him to the mound.
I tweeted this. I said, you take him because Fisher led off the top of the third, the top inning after the mess of the bottom of the second. I said, you let him hit so you don't embarrass him, but you don't throw him back out there in right field, not to punish him, but because you're trying to win the game. Now, at the time I tweeted that, I think it was still... You know, Luke Voit hadn't hit the 3-run home run and they hadn't gone back to back and it hadn't blown open and Taiwan Walker hadn't been taken out of the game. But you're trying to win the game, so you put somebody more competent or capable in that moment out there. What I wasn't thinking of was that there would be another misplayed ball a couple of innings later. I wasn't even trying, at that point, I was thinking you're trying to save the team from Fisher. Well, you also had to save Fisher from Fisher.
Yeah, that would have been bad not letting him hit. It's tough because you're right in embarrassing a guy. But at the same time, I mean, you want to give a guy a chance to save face a little bit, redeem himself. I don't know. I just, that's my thing with Fisher. I know it's ugly, but. But what are you going to do with him now?
Well, maybe the decision is different if it's 2-1 Yankees. You know, once it's a complete ass kicking.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I mean, who cares then at that point? But
what do you do with them? Are you?
Well, I mean, you don't have to do anything with them until you got a decision to make. So, Matt Shoemaker is going to throw a sim game or a bullpen side session today, and Teoscar Hernandez is actually going to swing the bat. And if that goes well, Teoscar's going to be back. I would imagine Teoscar's not back tonight, even if today goes well, because you want him to sleep on it. And if the oblique doesn't react negatively, which would be to say that he wakes up tomorrow morning feeling okay, you activate him for tomorrow night. So at that point, do you option out Jonathan Davis? He has options left, which means you can send him to the minor leagues without putting him through irrevocable waivers. Or do you cut bait with Derek Fisher and try to sneak him through waivers? Because there will be a team. Billy McKinney got picked up by the Milwaukee Brewers on waivers. There will be a team. You can't hide these metrics and these stats anymore, Ziggy. There will be a team who may look at Derek Fisher's batted ball statistics, yada, 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 and pick him up. And then he's gone. So the decision has to be made on Fisher. Are we willing to expose him to waivers? In my personal opinion, the answer to that question is yes.
See ya.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, on moving on. It's just, you not find it funny how we're like begging for Hernandez back? for his defensive
as a defensive upgrade.
Yeah. Well, remember how bad, I mean, he made some glaring mistakes.
I'm telling you, Ziggy, like
but that's how bad it is.
And like, it was,
we're begging for Hernandez.
Yes. And well, we're begging for his bat. I mean, we miss his bat. I mean, he's a great offensive player, has been this year. But I understand what you're saying, and I appreciate the joke. I keep coming back to the fact that you're going to be playing a three-game play-in series here in 2 weeks. I imagine it starts 2 weeks tonight. You'd love to have that series be in Buffalo as opposed to Yankee Stadium or wherever else it is that you may have to travel. But you cannot make the mistakes that the Blue Jays have with such consistency on the base paths and defensively and expect to get through that three-game set. And you got Ryu. When Taijuan Walker's at his best, he can be dominant. Now, he can also have ugly nights, and we've seen a couple of those. But I don't mind the Blue Jays' starting rotation, and I certainly have liked the way that their bullpen's pitched. I think this team is capable of winning a best two out of three. I don't think that that's being hot takey at all, and when you're dealing with such a small sample size, anything's possible. Like, but you cannot win if you don't defend and if you don't run the bases when you're on them. And I don't know if there are enough days left in the regular season to play clean baseball that I'm going to wake up 2 weeks from today or yesterday, whenever the series would start, and think confidently to myself, this team has ironed out its fundamental deficiencies and is ready to play. You can't play the way that they've played and expect to win playoff series.
When you talk about good teams, you talk about playoff teams, and it doesn't matter what sport, it's taking care of just the small things of the game. I feel like base running is one of those things where it should just happen. I know it wasn't an issue. It hasn't been an issue. Well, wasn't an issue last night. Obviously, the game was a blowout, but I feel like base running, which has been an issue this year for the Jays, that's something that shouldn't be, we shouldn't be questioning that or talking about it at this point. And I don't know what has to happen with them. I don't know if that's a focus thing, but to me, running the bases is like, in hockey, is like making sure you don't have too many men on the ice. That's what I kind of compare
awareness.
It to.
Awareness. Yeah. Understanding of situation.
The only thing about it is I do think running the bases just takes a little bit of skill. You have to recognize what you see, but that should be all ironed out in practice. Like, there shouldn't be the things that where Vlad was getting caught this year. I just don't understand it. Like, I give a little bit more leeway to, like, guys that are fast and steal bases. If you make a mistake running the bases, you're trying to get aggressive. I don't mind that. But some of these mistakes this year, yeah, they're
getting caught in between and all of that stuff.
It's too much.
So Silent Vic showed up to work this morning. He wanted to ignore the baseball.
Oh.
He wanted to ignore the baseball.
Well, we don't. You know what? You want to know what? Are you not happy about how we're all over Fisher? But people care. Like, going on Twitter, the messages I'm getting yesterday,
Ziggy,
people care about the Jays. People care about baseball. Are you not, like, excited?
Well, I was.
How much they mean right now in the city?
I was saying last night that the eyeballs are on this team now. I mean, the Raptors are out. But could you imagine the Rogers Center right now?
Oh.
Right now. Now, look.
We'd go home for a nap, and we'd be going to all the afternoon games. We'd be going for a lot of the night games.
Oh, yeah.
It would be awesome.
And I don't want to get into the whole reality of the situation. This team is not good enough to compete for a playoff spot in a 162 game season. It's not there yet. So I understand that this is a byproduct of the pandemic shortened season, and they're in Buffalo because of the pandemic. Like, all of these chips have fallen into place. But I'm saying, just imagine what it would be like. People are going to be watching these games now. There's nowhere to hide. The Leafs are done. The Raptors are done. The NFL is not a huge time commitment compared to the other sports. The Blue Jays are the local team in conversation and of consequence right now. And they will be playing, like, again, I said this earlier this week. I will repeat it now. The Blue Jays will be playing playoff baseball in 2 weeks' time. 2 weeks' time. It would be, I'm telling you, 15 and 16 were so much fun, man. The vibe around here, we should just all roll out, somehow figure out a way to keep our masks on and stay 6 feet apart and do all that. But maybe from our own little silos, there will be, it'll be a sense of community around this Blue Jays team because they're going to the playoffs.
I wonder with the starting pitcher if they can change the rotation going forward. Like if they have these games that are blowouts and Walker or Hyunjin Ryu only pitch or Rourke only pitch an inning or two, like do you not get Walker back into the lineup quicker now?
You could if you wanted. Yeah.
Like do you not play him? I mean, we can ask, you know, Dan Shulman this is
yep.
Do you not play him? I mean, he's not going to play today or tomorrow, but do you not play him Friday? Doubleheaders Friday or Saturday?
Friday against Philly. Yeah, like, you got Ryu pitching one of those doubleheader games on Friday. Like,
why not get Mix Walker back in, sprinkle him back in earlier?
That's a thought. Yeah. I mean, there are adjustments to be made. And Shun Yamaguchi is not going to be available tonight. I wouldn't throw him tomorrow either. So it's...
He had a rough one. I know he had a couple rough starts of the year and then kind of, you know, settled in. But last night, I don't know. That looked like the worst he's been all year. I don't know.
Yeah, he couldn't. Well, walk, hit batter. Your first five hitters of the third inning. Yeesh.
It looked like he couldn't get into it. Yeah, I understand when a guy just doesn't have it, but that looked... It looks strange to me last night for Yamaguchi.
It didn't look comfortable. But we were saying to Silent Vic, come into work today. He didn't want to talk baseball. So I said, he's an upbeat 22 minutes. He's an upbeat guy, right? He's an upbeat guy. So generally he's in a good mood. So I said, hey, Vic, how you doing?
I'm just fired up to be here today. It's pretty cool. Pretty damn cool.
Woo! Living in a van. Down by the river. That's Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Los Angeles Clippers.
Yes, it is.
Who traded a truckload of talent, including a Canadian kid, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, to the Oklahoma City Thunder for potentially as few as 2 years of Paul George. Oh, by the way, 4 first-round draft picks as well. Oh, and pick swaps. So 2020, 2022, 2024, 2026 first-rounders and pick swaps in 23 and 25. Paul George and Kawhi Leonard could both walk in free agency next year. Just imagine this. Imagine that the Brow leaves the Lakers, and in a year, Kawhi crosses the hall at Staples Center and joins Braun in the purple and yellow. And then do you think Steve Ballmer's going to be sounding like this at that point? He's going to...
It was
Denver,
so much,
baby. Jamal Murray.
Yeah, Jamal Murray was awesome. I don't want to be happy a guy loses, but man, did it feel good that Kawhi and the Clippers lost.
Yeah, but you see, I look at it differently.
For me, it felt good. I'm sorry. I don't know if that's petty or not, but...
I don't know if it's petty. I just don't think he cares.
Whatever, it felt good. Well, I don't know what you call it. You call it something, it just felt good. It would have felt just a little bit better if the Raps could have got by. The Celtics.
Because then you would have been able to say the Raps went deeper than Kawhi's Clippers.
Well, I've been saying the whole year the Raptors are going to struggle without Kawhi. It's no secret. I think at the end of the day, you can't say that they lost because of no Kawhi, but it definitely, you could feel it in the playoffs. And whether that had something to do with the bubble, the pandemic, there's lots of factors, but he just adds that to you. So when he goes down, it felt good to me. I'm sorry.
Well, I think we're going to
go ahead,
pick up the conversation and burl the lead with Hugh. We'll talk a little Nuggets and Clippers how we feel about Kawhi. I don't think Kawhi cares. He cares that he lost. I don't think he cares that he left Toronto. Dan Shulman at the top of the 7 o'clock hour. What do you do with Derek Fisher, and how do you reset the starting rotation if that's even part of the plan after what went down at Yankee Stadium last night? Doug Smith at 7:30. The Raps extend Nick Nurse a multi-year extension. No terms in terms of term or dollar. How many times can I say term in a sentence? But Nick Nurse is locked in to a long-term deal. We'll see if Doug Smith knows the terms at 7:30. Brian Burke for his weekly hit at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. Jason Sobel of the PGA Tour station on Sirius XM Radio at 8:15. We'll get you set for the U.S. Open at Winged Foot. Will the winner of the tournament be better than 10 over par? Holy crap, that course. Whew, that setup is tough.
I don't think you could beat 300. I don't think you'd shoot under 300 at Winged Foot with the conditions. 300 is what I'm giving you.
Okay. I'm going to have to give some thought on that. Maybe you can pull some strings with your rich friends.
Yeah.
And
maybe I can. Oh, I would love to go out there and watch you hack it around.
I'd be taking a lot of drops. Adnan Virk at 8:30. We'll attempt to give away some Untucket gift cards when we play All or Nothing. So be listening for your cue to call. It's coming up. Hughes in studio. We'll burrow the lead next. Dan Shulman at the top of the hour. Where do the Blue Jays go with Derek Fisher? Does Taijuan Walker pitch a little sooner than his next scheduled start because he was out of the game so early last night? That and so much more. Doug Smith, Brian Burke, Jason Sobel, Adnan Virk also ahead on the program. Be listening for your cue to call in about 15 minutes. We'll play All or Nothing in an attempt to give away Untucket gift cards. Biggest fan I know of the Washington football team. The nickname they must keep. I want them to keep it, man. That's great.
Yeah. It's okay, but let's tap the break. I mean, we're seeing people saying, oh, they could win the NFC East. Look, I love them. They're not going to win the NFC East.
Or maybe.
Everybody relax. Maybe they're still a bad football
team. Giants stink.
Yeah. That's true.
Philly may not be as good. We don't know.
But they'll still be better than Washington.
There's a conversation coming about Carson Wentz, by the way, if that doesn't turn around soon.
The Cowboys are a good team.
How about them Cowboys?
They stub their toe.
Yeah.
Questionable call. They're a good team. The Cowboys will win the NFC East, as much as it pains me to say that.
Hurts us all. Here's Hugh Burrell with Burrell the Lead.
Thank you, Scotty. Let's get you caught up with the playoff picture, both on the court and the ice. The Denver Nuggets did it again, coming back from 3-1 down in a series to win it. 104-89 over the Clippers last night in Game 7 to advance to the Western Final against the Lakers. Kitchener's Jamal Murray. My goodness, this young man is good. 40 points last night to lead the way. Disappointing end for Kawhi, Paul George, and the Clippers, who most thought would be battling the Lakers for the right to go to the finals and maybe even win the whole darn thing. Kawhi was typically hysterical after the game. And by that, I mean Kawhi was, really chill, man.
Just got to build some chemistry. Got to get smarter. We pieced up the team together. We were close. Denver's great. We shot ourselves in the foot the last three games.
All right, he's not worried. ESPN Stephen A. Smith watched the game last night in disbelief.
Oh, my God. Oh, my goodness. Nicest dude in the world, Paul George. Oh, my God. Did he look bad tonight? Shots off the side of the backboard, missed layups, missing wide open threes, turning the ball over. Denver ain't no joke. I give them a lot of credit, but this was a straight choke job by the Clippers in the fourth quarter. When you wet the bed like that in the last 12 minutes of a game 7, that's a choke job. I can't even defend my man Doc Rivers on this. Steve Ballmer gave up all those picks for Paul George. And damn.
Oh, Stephen A. Never one to mince words. So do you guys?
He's been really good, by the way, on those little Twitter videos and stuff that he does ever since the pandemic, where he's sitting at home.
Yeah, I love when he.
One minute hot take.
I love when he trolls the Cowboys and their fans.
Oh,
that's top shelf stuff. But you guys agree with him? Was this? Did Denver win this, or did the Clippers choke it away?
I think it's a little bit of both, Hugh. I think Murray was unreal and really kept them in the game. It could have been a runaway. They're down by, the Nuggets were down by 12 at one point, and Murray had 20 points in that second quarter to just kind of keep them within arm's reach of the Clipper. He did make 9 field goals in a quarter, which is the most by any player since 1997. So that gives you a little idea of how good he was. I thought George and Kawhi were, you have those games where you're expected to be the best and win it for your team. And yeah, they both choked as well. I don't think it was just a choke job by a couple of superstars. There was a lot more to this game than just that.
Nuggets erased double digit deficits in the final 3 games and won them all.
I thought everybody wanted to leave the bubble.
Yeah, I guess not.
You start to face elimination, you get tired, you want to leave the bubble and go home. Not the Denver Nuggets. I totally understand the feelings in our city right now about that Kawhi lost, right?
There you go.
But honestly, like, Kawhi doesn't care.
No.
He didn't care that he left Toronto. He played at home. He's making his money. He's a great basketball player. He's a fun guy.
Of course, it goes without saying.
Come on, guys. Didn't it feel good when they lost? Are you guys not on board with me?
I am happier for Jamal Murray than I am pissed off at Kawhi Leonard.
I'm happy that Kawhi Leonard lost. Sorry, I don't know what that is, or loser or what, but I'm happy.
Ziggy's out for revenge.
Yes,
I love it, though. That's great.
But we knew he was only going to be here for a year. Yeah.
I thought he was coming back when they won.
Never staying
well,
for
you
more
don't
than
know,
a year.
You don't know that.
Oh, I know. Okay, I don't know it, but I know it. You know, like, come on, he wasn't staying. Anyway, yeah, Kawhi and the Clippers will be just fine. But I'm with you, Scotty. I'm really happy for Jamal Murray. I don't know. They may run out of gas against the Lakers, but we'll see. The Western Conference Final begins on Friday night. The other game last night saw the Heat beat the Celtics 117-114 in overtime to take Game 1 of the Eastern Final. All right, let's go to the ice, where the Islanders forced a Game 6 with the Lightning.
2-on-1 here. Lee through the left circle. He's with Everly down the middle. Feeds him. Shoots. He scores! Jordan Everly has won it in double overtime! The Islanders win it 2-1! They stayed off elimination, and there will be a Game 6 on Thursday night!
Dave Mishkin has got some competition.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
He scored!
Scotty, he was listening
Jordan
to the show.
Is that Steve Ballmer?
Jordan Everly has...
That's pretty good, though.
Woo!
Yeah.
That's Steve Ballmer.
Yeah. Impressive win for the Islanders. They were down 3-1, and now they've kind of clawed their way back. And I still think the Lightning win this series. But you never want to give the other team hope.
Well, it is the dream matchup, the Islanders and Stars.
Oh, my goodness. So I can't wait.
We're just holding out hope for that.
It's amazing how everyone is saying, wow, this Lightning team is different without Braden Point, and how much they miss a guy like that. No one has said one word about Steven Stamkos out of the lineup. I still think if he can make some kind of return, it would definitely put them over the top. I mean, you add him to your power play, and then everything just becomes a lot easier. You get just another weapon in the lineup. But Braden Point's my Conn Smythe guy right now. I know everyone's kind of picking Hedman and the whole panel on Sportsnet. They've all got Hedman in as the best player in the playoffs. I still think Point is the guy, and when he's not playing, it definitely hurts the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, the Lightning are still going to win, though. Still going to win, despite Everly's heroics last night.
Beat the Islanders, but will they beat Dallas?
Well,
they
had better, because if this is a copycat league like everybody says it is, then everyone's going to start playing Dallas Stars kind of hockey. All right, let's move on to golf. The U.S. Open begins at Winged Foot tomorrow. Cannot wait for this one. Star of the show, well, it's the course itself. Extremely difficult. This will be the sixth U.S. Open held at Winged Foot, and only one player has ever finished above par at the U.S. Open here. It was Fuzzy Zeller in 1984. He won at -4. In 1974, also known as the Massacre at Winged Foot, Hale Irwin won with a score of +7. Tiger Woods has won the U.S. Open 3 times, but the last time it was played at Winged Foot in 2006, he missed the cut at +12. With its ankle hiding rough and its downright frightening greens, Tiger was asked just how difficult Winged Foot really is.
Well, I think it's right up there next to Oakmont and I think Carnoustie, as far as just sheer difficulty without even doing anything to it. I think those three golf courses, and they can host major championships without ever doing anything to them. And, you know, this one or Oakmont here is either one or two.
By the way, Tiger is 50-1 to win the U.S. Open. Here's some other odds for you. Dustin Johnson, the favorite at 17-2. John Rahm, 10-1. Justin Thomas, 14-1. Xander Schauffele and Rory McIlroy, both 16-1. Ziggy, who you got?
Yeah, I no one's really giving Tiger any consideration. I don't know. The John Rahm seems to be up there for me. He's won on some difficult golf courses. He's putting well. He seems to have gotten hit the mental side of the game down. That was a question mark before. He used to get a little bit heated when things weren't going his way. So he's really changed his game that way. I like him. I think DJ is a,
yeah, nobody's, you know, playing Johnson better than Johnson right now.
Yeah. It's tough to bet against him as well. I think just both those guys have to be the two favorites going into it. Yeah. I haven't played Winged Foot or Carnoustie. A lot of my buddies have played both of them, but I have played Oakmont many times. And I understand what Tiger's saying, how you don't really have to do anything in that course to make it hard. In fact, the way that Oakmont's usually set up is that they slow the greens down for the U.S. Open. I remember that a couple years ago, the last time that, what was it, 2016, that Oakmont held the U.S. Open, and they actually do slow the greens down. They roll at over 14.
Yeah,
for the members. And the course plays hard. The roughs always, they have a thick rough. It's not too high, but it's always really thick. They grow it out a little bit for the U.S. Open, but those courses are tough.
Yeah. And really? And
they,
really?
Yeah, they double cut the greens. It's hard.
And the challenge for everybody, but Tiger comes to mind here. Now, you can't spray your driver everywhere.
No. I mean, obviously, just like in every tournament, accuracy off the tee is at a premium. But even more so at this course, because some of these fairways are 15 yards wide. Like when they narrow down, like around a dog leg, they're really narrow. And when you get closer to the green in your second shot, some of them are like 10 to 15 right. yards
rough
wide.
Rough up to your shins too.
And yeah, all like
oh, you can't literally, if like I've played Glen Abbey before the Canadian Open.
Yeah, yeah.
And they actually grow the rough out longer, and then they cut it down a little bit so it's all the same length. If you don't keep an eye on where you're, and this is at the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey, if you don't keep a line on where your ball is off the tee,
yeah,
you can literally sit there for 20 minutes and not find your ball, and you'd be 5 feet off the fairway.
Yeah.
And so I can't imagine what a U.S. course is like.
And then when you go in to get it, you do find it, throw your hat down on it or something before you go back to the cart, or else you'll never find it again.
And these guys can't even make an approach shot from the rough.
Yeah.
Like for us, it would be a 60-degree wedge back into play. Think about that, being 150 yards from a green and having to wedge a ball back into play when you're 3 feet off the fairway.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
And you'd better stay below the hole this week.
Oh, yeah.
Here's some tee times for you. 8:07 tomorrow, it's Tiger, Justin Thomas, and Colin Morikawa. An all-Canadian group tees off at 8:29, Mac Hughes, Adam Hadwin, and Corey Connors. And then at 1:16, a trio of big, big hitters, Dustin Johnson, Bryson DeChambeau, and Tony Finau. Cannot wait. This is going to be a lot of fun.
If I had to give you a stat for the Yankees 1-2 hitters, guys, would it shock you if I said last night was the first time the first and second in the lineup both had 5 RBIs in a game? I was a little shocked at that. Think of all the lineups the Yankees have put together
through all the years.
Yeah, just because they've
through
been
all the years. Would that surprise you at all?
Mm-hmm. I guess so. I was also surprised. It was the Yankees had a 20 spot in a game in 2015. Like, usually you score 20 runs and then somebody says, oh, that's the first time so-and-so has done that. Such and such a team has done that in 20 years, 30 years. The Yankees did it 5 years ago. So
I don't know. I was just out. It shocked me a little bit.
What do they say, Ziggy, after a night like last night? You just have to flush it.
Flush it.
Flush it.
Bye-bye. It's gone.
Got to bounce
Jays
back tonight.
Fans. Oh, yeah.
And
yep, get that down.
After all the bullpen usage last night, Tanner Roark might get his wish and throw 178 pitches tonight. I mean, Tanner?
That's not happening.
You want the ball? Have at it, brother. Yeah, thank you very much, Keith Hernandez. Remember, it's best to turn those mics off, and we don't need that happening tonight. We don't need that happening tonight. Keith Hernandez, it was just the like 30 or 40 year anniversary of him getting his 2000th hit, and there's that photo of him blowing a dart in the dugout. Middle of a ball game.
Oh, the good old days.
Just sucking back a Pall Mall, celebrating the 2000th career hit.
Crack a Bud Light.
Yeah. But it was Len Dawson, the first Super Bowl, quarterback for Kansas City, chugging a beer and smoking a cigarette at halftime on the bench.
Oh, Guy Lafleur used
to
spark him up in the dressing room.
Worked for him.
Why not?
Until they went and changed all the smoking bylaws.
I know, I'm right with you. I hate that.
It's almost like we're trying to be responsible humans or something. 416-870-0590, 416-870-0590. If you're like me, your waistline has grown during the pandemic, which means you don't like to tuck your shirts anymore.
Yeah, it's untuck it from now on.
We
I'm telling
will
you that.
Be giving away untuck it gift cards when we play All or Nothing. We want you to be the contestant, so dial up now, 416-870-0590. We play in minutes. We did not have a winner yesterday, so the $100 in Untucked gift cards becomes $200 as the amount carries over. 3 true or false questions in All or Nothing. Get them all right or all wrong. Either way, you're a winner. Our Wednesday contestant is Greg in Toronto. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm not bad, guys. How are you?
We're excellent. We wish you good luck, and may you untuck. Ziggy, take it away.
All right. The Jays got smoked 20-6 last night by the Yankees, but the 14-run loss was not the worst in franchise history. Was not the worst in franchise history. True or false?
That's true.
That is correct. The worst was 22 runs once in 79 and 2000.
Yeah, 24-2 to the California Angels in 79 and 23-1 to the Orioles in 2000. Yikes. All right, you're in good shape here, Greg. You got to get the next two correct and you're a winner.
All right, Greg, just the one G or do you spell it with two Gs?
Two Gs.
Two, okay. Two, all right, good. All right, Greg. The Denver
My mother didn't like Gregory, so.
Oh, okay. Well, Gregory's a cool name, man. All right, Gregory, here's your second question. The Denver Nuggets have never made it to the NBA Finals in their history. Is that true or is that false?
Oh, that would be false.
It's true, Gregory. Denver's 0-3 in the conference finals. The last two losses coming against the Lakers, who they will play next.
We had a rough week last week and gave away $500 at the end of the week on a Friday. We have had no winners yesterday or today, so we're going to be up to $300 in Untuckit gift cards to give away tomorrow in All or Nothing. The question I would have asked in week one, two quarterbacks in the NFL led the league with four touchdown passes. Those people were Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. The answer to that question would have been false. It was Aaron Rodgers and Russell Wilson on my two favorite teams.
Please stop.
Who threw four touchdown passes each? Dan Shulman. Should Derek Fisher play another half inning in the outfield for the Toronto Blue Jays? And I don't mean tonight. I mean ever again. How do you reconfigure the starting rotation since Taiwan Walker didn't pitch deep into last night's game? Or do you just keep going? That and so much more as we get closer to the Blue Jays playing playoff baseball. Shulman coming up. Back in action tonight. It is, though, the morning after the night before. Everything seems so hunky-dory after Vladdy's oppo bomb there in the top of the second inning. Little 1-0 lead off of Davey Garcia, a guy who pitched very well against the Jays in Buffalo last week. And then?
Yeah, it was a good feeling. I had a good feeling in the game.
For all the wrong reasons, Ziggy, it became the Derek Fisher show.
A domino effect of unfortunate circumstances here.
That sounds like the next Lemony Snicket's movie. Lemony Snicket's and a domino effect of unfortunate events. Dan Shulman, that was his voice. And now you hear it live on Leadoff. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. The funny thing was, I think I said that in the second inning. Like, I didn't even have any concept about the domino effect of unfortunate circumstances that was to come. That was ugly. It's amazing to be a team that's, you know, pretty good in a playoff position and have two games like this in 5 days.
Yes. Okay. And I get where you're going with that. For me, Dan, I'm not sure. I don't want to take anything away from what this team has done, and I'm not here to pour cold water on the excitement. Playoff baseball in Toronto was not expected in 2020. So that's the baseline off of which we work. But I'm not sure there are enough games or days left between now and the end of the regular season to convince me that this team will completely clean itself of all of its base running and defensive issues.
No, they won't. They have too many base running issues, and they're not a good defensive team. The eye test says they're not, and the analytics say they're not. They're not a good defensive team, and obviously what Derek Fisher's night last night is a whole conversation unto itself that that we can have. They've in terms of they're flawed. They're the seventh or eighth best team probably in a year in which eight teams are going to get into the playoffs. And I'm with you. I'm not here to pour cold water on this either. They have shown a tremendous amount of resiliency through a bunch of stuff to win more games than they've lost, and they deserve credit for that. That having been said, what happened last night can't happen. It just can't happen to a major league team. And the Derek Fisher dropping the one ball, not getting to the second ball, just completely torpedoed Taiwan Walker's outing. And that's another unfortunate part, because he looked like he had really good stuff. And eventually they just knocked him around in the second inning. So I think that they're going to have a decision to make in the next couple of days, because Teoscar Hernandez is coming back. And I think we all think they're going to make one decision, even though a lot of us think they should probably make another decision, but it's not our day to run the team. But they, from the day they got him, they, you know, the front office has talked about the upside and the tools of Derek Fisher, like they did with Socrates Brito. You know, they saw something in Brandon Drury that was not evident to most of us who were watching the games. There are some people just at the front office really, really likes and thinks that they have breakthrough ability and a high ceiling, but I don't know if they can do anything but put their best team on the field every single night the rest of the season. And I'm not here to, like, pound on the guy. It's, you know, that's not who I am, but I don't see how they can put Derek Fisher in the outfield again right now. You know, Jonathan Davis is a better option. Kevin Biggio is a better option. They have flexibility. They can move people around, and I think they've got to put their best lineup on the field every day the rest of the season.
Right, but Dan, those same people who saw something in Brandon Drury finally came around to the notion that enough was enough. The same people who were intrigued by the handedness, and that was the quote, of Socrates Brito finally came around, and it took them less time with him than it did with Drury, and he was shown the door. Derek Fisher, I would imagine, is in that same boat. And Ziggy and I were talking about the fact that he seems to have the yips. So it's not the Knobloch, Steve Sachs, second to first base throwing yips. It's not the Mackie Sasser, Giovanni Soto, I can't throw the ball back to the pitcher as a catcher after receiving a pitch yips. It's the I can't catch a fly ball yips. This is a guy who in his first game as a Blue Jay a little more than a year ago in Baltimore misplayed an easy fly ball in right field, and it clunked him in the cheekbone.
Yep.
And I mean, there's something 100%. Here.
I'm not going to push back on any of this. I have seen him, since he got here, pull up on, I don't know, 5, 6, 7, 8 balls where his speed dictates he should have caught the ball. And now in hindsight, you know, I've always wondered, like, is he just not taking good routes? Is he not a risk taker? Maybe he's afraid to try to catch it, and so he'll just play it on a bounce. So you can be, you know, we can talk about exit velocity and sprint speed all we want, but if he is afraid to make the plays or can't make the plays, none of the StatCast stuff matters. It just really doesn't. And the day they acquired him, I was in Houston doing a game for ESPN Radio. So I went and talked to all the Houston broadcasters. They wanted to know about Aaron Sanchez and Joe Biagini, and I wanted to know about Derek Fisher. And over and over and over again, I got from everybody, and I'm like four or five different people, the tools are real. Like, once in a while, he'll run into one and hit one a mile. The speed is real, but just the, you know, the nuts and bolts baseball stuff isn't there. And he is very fast, but he can't steal a base. He's got a below-average arm. Like, I've heard people refer to him as a five-tool player, and I don't mean people in the front office. I just mean, like, people on Twitter and stuff. I don't know anybody who ever called him a five-tool player. He's got a below-average arm. And again, he's got great speed. We saw him hit a 448-foot home run in Buffalo. But if you can't make routine plays in the outfield, there are 27 other guys in the room. You know, you got to put your best team on the field. And will he hit a little bit more against Jonathan than Jonathan Davis? Maybe. But not to get too deep into this, if they ever want to, you know, they've got Sean Panic. If they face a tough lefty and they want to sit somebody down, one way to do it is, you know, you DH Teoscar or Grichuk and you put Jonathan Davis in there against the lefty. Like, I actually think a right-hand hitting outfield bat as a fourth outfielder makes way more sense than a left-handed bat, because there's an opportunity to get Davis in there and DH one of the other guys when you sit Shaw or Panic down against a lefty and you got to have somebody else. Like, it's just not a fit in my mind. You know, Alfred is gone, McKinney is gone, Davis may get sent down, and Fisher's still here. And again, I'm not trying to, he's struggling, right? And I feel badly for him. Whatever's going on is not fun. Derek Fisher's having less fun with this than anybody, but this is the major leagues and they're in a pennant race, and I think a tough decision has to be made.
Walker looked like he had his stuff last night though, Dan. That's the tough part for me, is when you have a guy coming in playing well. How hard is that on a pitcher when you do have your stuff and your guys just seem to kind of fail you and, you know, defensively?
Yeah, it's incredibly hard. And you know, whether they eventually would have gotten to him or not, Ziggy, we don't know. But I'm with you. He looked, for the first five batters of the game, he looked great. He was three up, three down in the first, and then it was an out and a double, I believe, in the second inning before everything went sideways on him. And I thought he had really good stuff. And it happened two plays in a row. Like, the second play wasn't routine, but a good major league outfielder catches that ball almost all the time, in my opinion. And I think, and I've seen this before, where he kind of, you know, tippy-toes a little bit as he gets close to the wall. He pulls up a little bit before he gets to the wall. And they're the Yankees. You know, you give them five outs, and they're going to pummel you. And then, you know, Yamaguchi just didn't have it. We haven't seen that from him in a long time. You know, he had a rough night, and now they have to use Kay, and now they have to use Baraki, and they have to use guys they don't want to use. And they're going to have to make a roster move today. I believe in order to get a fresh arm up, because they got a doubleheader Friday, and they're all of a sudden, all that work they did to get their staff, you know, back in sync is kind of in disarray again after last night. So I feel very badly for Taijuan Walker. I think Taijuan Walker is good. I think he had his good stuff last night. I think he was capable of having a good outing last night against a really good lineup, and none of that happened. You just can't give good teams extra outs.
Do you think the Jays move him up now and play him sooner, maybe this Friday in the doubleheader?
Yeah, it's possible. We were talking about that. Like, last night had Ross Stripling written all over it, and I'm guessing, Buck guessed, actually, between the innings, he said to me, well, maybe, like, he thought he saw Stripling before the game throwing a bullpen, and maybe he was doing that, getting ready for one of the doubleheader games on Friday. And if that's the case, you know, that's unfortunate that they weren't able to use him last night. They could bring Walker back on short rest. They did it with Trent Thornton earlier in the year when he got knocked out in the second inning of a game. They brought him back 3 days later, I think it was, on short rest. But, you know, again, they might have to make a move to help them. They've got Patrick Murphy and Hector Perez on the taxi squad. They're both relievers. They've got TJ Zoik stretched out as a starter in Rochester. And I fear like somebody like Anthony Kay could get demoted today, unless somebody comes up hurt. Like if Ken Giles came out of the game with something, or Yamaguchi's got something, you know, then maybe there's an IL thing. But I'm afraid like Anthony Kay, who's struggling now, he was great in the first half of the year and he hasn't been as good. You know, maybe they demote Anthony Kay for 10 days, let him try to figure it out, get some rest, clear his mind, and bring up TJ Zoikin as an emergency guy who can pitch 3-4 innings in a game in which they're trailing. And it's Garrett Cole and Tanner Roark tonight. Like they need a contingency plan for tonight in case, you know, this game gets away from them.
Right. And we're with Dan Shulman, and it could have been Dan, and you know where I'm going with this. Tanaka and Ryu tomorrow. but no, which is, I guess, a determination that they've made that they want to. I wonder, do you think we're headed towards six-man starting rotations, generally speaking? Or do you think this is a byproduct of the shortened ramp-up off the pandemic?
I think it's a byproduct of the shortened ramp and fewer off days in the season. It's a short season, but it's an intense season. 60 in 66 days is fewer off days per week or per month than 162 in 186 days, if you know what I'm saying. So I think these guys usually pitch a fair bit on one extra day's rest, and they haven't been able to do that. And even 60 in 66 is misleading for the Blue Jays, because they had that series against the Phillies postponed because of the Marlins outbreak. So now they had 28 games in 27 days. So nobody could take an extra day for 5.5 turns through the rotation. And, if Charlie says they asked for you and he asked for an extra day, then I think we've got to take that at face value. So, you and I had this conversation off the air about what they could have, well, on the air and off the air, and you were right. If they had been in a position to do it, he would have been set up to start the last day of the regular season. You hope you don't need him the last day of the regular season, and then it's a moot point. They've got one, unless they get really creative or think outside the box, they've got one more opportunity to give him an extra day, either his next start, his last start, or first day of the playoffs. And I think I know what I would do, but again, the doubleheader complicates things, and I think they've kind of got to get through Friday and then come up for air and see where they are.
Dan Shulman, our guest, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So by virtue of the fact that the Blue Jays lost to the Yankees last night, Toronto is now seventh of the eight teams, and if the playoffs were to start today, would play their three-game series in Tampa Bay against the number two-seeded Rays. What do you make of the announcement of the bubble system here and the fact, Dan, that all the way up until the World Series, there will be no off days
Yep.
Like, because there are no travel days, obviously. Yep. The World Series still will be two off day, three off day, two. But you're three straight, you're five straight, and then in the championship series, you're seven straight. I like this because my first thought is it may force teams to actually use their starting pitchers more.
Mm-hmm.
Or am I wrong?
Well, I'll tell you why it's happening. It's happening because they want to finish on October the 28th. They want to have the Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Tuesday, Wednesday that they always have in the World Series. They want to avoid Thursday night football, and they want to avoid Monday night football. These are things I know. So those are the days they want to play the World Series. So to do that, you end on Wednesday, October the 28th. Now back, you start from the finish line and back up to the start. They need extra days to get teams into the bubble. This is COVID. It's 2020. So there are no off days within the first three rounds, but there are three off days after the wild card round before the division series round. That is to get the players to the bubble, get them tested, get them settled, and then start baseball. So if you're losing, you know, if you have three off days before division series round, you can't have as many off days within playoff rounds if you want to finish on October the 28th. That's what's going on here. It's a combination of television and COVID. The only reason they can do it is because nobody's traveling. It allows them to do this. I like it. I think it's fine. It's one of the many, many things where you say, well, we got to do it this way. You know, seven-inning doubleheaders, home teams playing, you know, you're the home team on the road, runner at second, rescheduling games like crazy. They got to do what they got to do to finish the season. And I think they've done a good job. I think they've chosen the right ballparks, assuming that the West Coast is playable. And, you know, who knows what the situation will be with the fires and the air quality. But when they made the decision to choose L.A., San Diego, Arlington, Houston, and put together this format, I think a lot of thought went into it. And I think it was a good plan.
Rosters will be at 28. There will be a large taxi squad as well.
Yeah.
So you play a three-game series, that's obvious. You're only going to use a starting pitcher once. You're playing a five-game series, Dan. You can't get him game one and game five, right?
Unless you bring him back on short rest, but let's use the Blue Jays staff as an example. You're going to have a bullpen game. You're going to have a Merriweather to a Stripling to a Baruchy to a Bass kind of game if things go well. How many teams have five good starters? So I think every team will be doing that. It's going to be stressful on pitching staffs, but you've got 28-man rosters. Most teams will have 14, 15 pitchers. You know, we're used to seeing teams go down a pitcher heading into the playoffs because of the off days. That can't happen anymore. So I think you'll see teams carry a 15-man pitching staff, and it's going to be a true test of the depth of the staff within the entire organization. And then you'll see, you know, again, you can change your roster from round to round, right? So, you know, if one guy gets worn out, you might see him go to the taxi squad and somebody else come up for the next round.
Just because we speculated on this and it has come true. I would count the Blue Jays, Dan, as my American League team right now that has been the pleasant surprise. And I believe that the Angels being the unpleasant surprise of the American League has facilitated that. In the National League, the Miami Marlins are the fifth seed right now and would play at number four San Diego in a three-game series if the playoffs were to start today. Sixto Sanchez is a name that nobody up here would be familiar with. The Jays faced him earlier in the year, but other than that, nobody would have heard of him. Like, this guy seems like a bona fide ace. Is Miami a 2021, I'll say, contender, but playoff bubble team in a normal season, or do you think that they're not a 162-game contender yet, and it might be 2022, 2023? I ask only because they're a pleasant surprise, and I'm fascinated to see if Jeter can actually do this.
Yeah, and that's without saying that they lost 18 players to a COVID outbreak for a couple of weeks and still held their own, which is amazing. I mean, you lose 18 of your 30 players and find a way to win enough ball games for a 14-day period to keep you around 500 is really impressive. So they're improving, and I don't think they're a joke like you know, they have been, or the Orioles, like they're not that team anymore. They've got some good young players. I don't think they're a great team, and if this year were 162, I don't think it would be sustainable for them. I think eventually a Brewers or a Reds or somebody, a Mets would figure it out and be better than them. But they are improving, and they've got a good farm system that is starting to come around. They've got good arms at the minor league level, or they're not pitching this year, but that we haven't seen yet. They're getting there, but, you know, can they beat us? San Diego, I mean, two out of three, I guess anything can happen. No real home field advantage, no fans, that sort of thing. But they're getting there, and they have been a surprise. And they're, again, considering the COVID outbreak, it's borderline miraculous that they've been able to do what they've done so far.
Always great to chat, Dan. Thank you for this, and we will do it again next Wednesday. We'll be, inside the final week on the push to the playoffs. It's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. We're enjoying the games, no question, not so much last night. But we'll do it again next week and look forward to talking to you.
Well, the good news is there's another baseball game tonight. Clean
yes.
plate.
Flush it. Flush it and right back at it.
That's right.
There you go. Dan Shulman, the play-by-play voice of the Toronto Blue Jays on Sportsnet, and the Blue Jays and Yankees play game two of their three-game series, a game you can listen to right here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, a game you can watch on Sportsnet 7 o'clock this evening. Tanner, give me the ball and let me throw 150 pitches. Rourke against Gerrit Cole, Yankees ace, the $300 million man.
I'm looking forward to that, though. No?
Get back on the horse, man.
Yeah.
And, Gerrit Cole has not been dominant.
No.
Hasn't been lights out.
But the thing with him is once he gets going and players of that caliber, they just seem to find the right times of the season, when to turn it on, and now you have to watch out.
What is the percentage likelihood? Should we play what is the percentage likelihood, or should we play a yay or nay? Just a random yay or nay.
I got to hear the question first.
Derek Fisher in the starting lineup tonight. Percentage yay or nay is too easy. Percentage likelihood.
Percentage likelihood that he is in the lineup, I'm going to say is like 56%.
What? You think he's going to be in the starting lineup?
Yeah, they're going to throw him back in.
Okay. Percentage likelihood that I'm on Twitter, if the Blue Jays release their starting lineup and Derek Fisher is in it, 100 million percent. That is the percent that I'm on Twitter if Derek Fisher's in the starting lineup. Because I need to see that reaction.
I like to give guys second chances. When I'm coaching, if a guy doesn't have a good one or a bad period, I like throwing the guy right back out. So that's just the way I do things.
You're a CAC guy, eh? You like nine lives.
Well, not nine, but I like to give him a couple. A couple. You give a guy a chance. That was ugly, though. I'm going to go. I'm slightly favoring him. I think I can just. Yeah. I guess it just wouldn't surprise me if Charlie put him back in.
Well, it would surprise me. We should make a bet on that.
Oh, you now let's you come you up, have me somewhere.
We'll make a gentleman's bet. It won't be anything 100 kilometers or a bad haircut, 100 kilometers on a bicycle or anything like that. We'll come up with some sort of bet here in the next hour. We'll get Silent Vic to weigh in, see what he thinks. We'll make a bet. Does Derek Fisher play tonight? Because you seem confident he will. You have him at 56% going in.
Well, huh? I wouldn't say confident. I'd say leaning towards playing. I'm leaning towards him, them putting him back in. Because that's...
Wrong.
Silent Vic was so sour, though. Yesterday during the game.
Oh, he was an unhappy guy.
See, I'm a real fan. I watch the whole game even when my team is not doing well.
That is not being a real fan. That is being a complete and total lunatic. Even Yankees fans, they were winning. They stopped watching last night at some point.
Okay, when we're up, I turn it off sometimes.
Yeah. Well, the ass kicking sometimes was a little much last night. So, not long after we went off the air yesterday, the Raptors announced a multi-year contract extension for their head coach, Nick Nurse. We thought, well, we'll book Doug Smith. That was before Kawhi Leonard and the LA Clippers bowed out to Jamal Murray. To Jamal Murray and the Denver Nuggets, good Canadian kid. There's a lot to unpack with Doug Smith, and we'll do that next. I think this is a question Kawhi is asking himself a year later. Dan in Georgetown, we're taking requests all of a sudden, not for music necessarily, Ziggy, but for drops. Dan in Georgetown wants this one from Gibby for Kawhi Leonard.
Suck on that one for tonight, will you?
Never anyone... see? Toronto's with me on this one.
Does anyone feel Kawhi?
The bass is with me on this
the
one.
Bass.
Thank you.
The bass.
The bass.
My electorate, my people are with me. I still say, now Kawhi cares that he lost, but he doesn't give a crap that he left.
He doesn't. Honestly, I feel like championship ballot in the second round. It's just like, all right, what's tomorrow? I mean, the guy wants to win. He's a champion. He's a warrior, but I feel like that's what makes him so good. It's just win or lose, it's the same. All the good players I played with, it's just even keel. They don't get too high, too low. It's just, how do we get better next season?
Well, the guy who might be cleaning a mess out of his drawers this morning is Steve Ballmer, who, They have traded a lot of future capital to win now in that Paul George trade with Oklahoma City, and both Kawhi and Paul George have the options, whether they take them or not, have the options to explore free agency a year from now. Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, we initially booked because Nick Nurse signed a contract extension to remain as the head coach of the Raptors. And then, of course, Jamal Murray and the Nuggets went and did what they did last night and eliminated the LA Clippers from the Western Conference playoffs. So a lot to get to. Doug, it's always good to have you on as my voice dies on me. I'll try and pick that back up. Thanks for doing this. Let's start with the Nick Nurse contract extension. So this happens a little bit in the inverse. We still have questions about the future of the Raptors front office, but the coach is locked in. What's your sense on whether the front office will follow suit and lock in on the long term?
Well, just a matter of time on that, I think. I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. I know they've had some preliminary discussions, but nothing. Obviously, nothing signed yet or at the end stage, but they'll get it done. But I think both Masiah Ujiri and Bobby Webster will be back. And, you know, they'll be able to present a united front going forward to fight for social justice and win championships. And I think it's a bit of a no-brainer, and I have no doubt that it's going to happen sometime this, whatever's left of the summer, before the offseason hits.
Okay, so it's a no-brainer from an MLSE Raptors perspective, but the thing with Masiah is there's a bunch of things he could do with his life. Now, he's a basketball guy through and through, and obviously his Giants of Africa is a spinoff of that and et cetera. You are absolutely convinced that Raptors fans should have nothing to worry about in terms of Masiah being here?
At this point, no, I don't think they should. But I've said all along, Masiah's in his early 50s. This is not his last job. There will be other challenges that will come up that he will want to go and try to conquer. Whether that's in 3 years or 2 years or 5 years, I don't know. But this is not his last job as a leader of men. And I don't know what the next one will be, but there will be another one, and it probably will not be in Toronto.
You don't think he'll want to hear what other organizations have to say about him moving forward? Maybe there's some kind of different opportunity he can get south of the border?
I think eventually he might listen, but there aren't a lot of opportunities out there right now. There aren't a lot of team president jobs that are available, and I don't think anybody's going to, at this point of this weird season, going to create one for him. So I don't think there's a lot of stuff out there that would intrigue him at the moment, but that doesn't say that 18 months from now it sure won't be. And again, I don't think he will end his life living in Toronto running the Raptors.
No. No question about that. The one thing, though, that
it's the Reds win.
Yeah, the one thing, Doug, and I mean, this is an obvious statement to make, is that the MLSE and the Raptors need to know at some point. You can go into a lame duck season with even a star player, but in terms of plotting your future and planning your future, what the franchise looks like, you need a front office with some degree of stability, or at least that is always preferred.
Oh, absolutely preferred. I think, you know, players going into lame duck years is one thing. General managers and team presidents is entirely different, because they do set the course. And I do think, you know, I don't think Mazzai will do anything this offseason that he wouldn't do, whether he had a 5-year contract or a 1-year contract. He's not that kind of guy. I don't think people need to worry about that. He won't be feathering his nest kind of thing because he has 1 year left on his deal. But yeah, I think ownership would want, you know, obviously a very talented leader of the team under contract for as long as they possibly could get him. Money, I can't imagine money being an issue. They would just go unlock the door of the vault and get some more.
8 figures.
So I don't think that's out of the realm of possibility. No, not at all. And it's probably in this day and age worth it.
Yeah. What do you think his first order of business, big order of business, will be this offseason?
I think Fred VanVleet's got to be at the top of the list of the three guys, VanVleet, Ibaka, Gasol, because I don't know that you want to go into next year with a 34, 35-year-old point guard and Kyle Lowry with 1 year left on his deal and nothing behind him. So I think they need to get Fred done quickly. And whether that's a short-term deal because the money is so cloudy, the money issue, the cap issue is so weird this year, whether that's a one-in-one deal or a 5-year deal, I don't know. But I think that's the one they got to get taken care of right off the bat.
Do you think Kyle, because he was not happy last fall in training camp prior to getting the one-year extension, do you think he will be satisfied in a, quote, lame duck year? Or do they got to deal with that?
No, I think the circumstances are so much different that he probably will be okay, because last year they were coming off a championship. He obviously had, you know, he needed that golden handshake. He needed that thank you. He wanted to be appreciated. $31 million did that. I think the circumstances of the team are different this year, and I think he'll be okay with that going into a year on the last year of his deal, and we'll see what happens at the end of the 2021 season. Again, I'm not sure that Kyle Lowry finished his career in Toronto either. I think I'm sure he thinks he has more to give for a longer period of time than maybe his organization does, especially if they give Fred VanVleet like a 4-year deal at $87 million.
Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, our guest. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. No doubt, Doug, you've been poking around in the last few days in the aftermath of the season ending Friday night. What, now that there have been a couple of nights or more than that for people in the Raptors organization to sleep on what went down, emotions a bit detached, what is the general sense and consensus on the state of Pascal Siakam's play?
He didn't play well in the Boston series. There's no question about that. It's undeniable. But there's not nearly as much long-term worry in the organization as there is among the people. The people overreacted. He didn't play well. I think everybody knows that. But it's not like he had a history of playing poorly, and this was not an aberration. This was an odd circumstance, an odd performance. And I think they're convinced that he gets back in the gym as soon as he can and gets back to what he was when he made an all-star team in February. The concern isn't there in the organization like it is among people who aren't in the organizations.
Yeah. Do you think he can be that first option superstar without somebody else big with him, like a Kawhi, or, I mean, I'm not even sure who else they could bring in, but it just seemed like with Kawhi, his game was, you know, what we all expected to see this year that we saw last year.
I think so. I don't know. I think he has more to give as a player. I think there's a lot of room for his game to grow, his decision-making, ball handling, his shooting could always be better. I think we've known in his history that he works hard at his craft. It gets better. Whether he has the strength of will is the question. And he's 26 years old or 25 years old and hasn't played much. So I think he deserves a chance to find out. I think he does, but obviously we don't know because he didn't do it in the 1 year he had to, but it was also the first year he's ever asked to.
Doug Smith is with us on Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So you're Steve Ballmer, the owner of the Clippers, and you're waking up this morning, and you're thinking to yourself, what, considering that you've traded the future for Paul George and you've got the possibility, and I underline it's only a possibility at this point, of both Paul George and Kawhi testing the free agency waters in a year. Like, the Clip went all in, Doug, and there are no guarantees now that this is going to do anything other than completely blow up in their owner's face.
And he's building a billion-dollar arena.
Yes.
So he's got a lot of stuff going on in the next 4 or 5 years that he needs a championship or to play for a championship on that kind of resume. I'm terribly nervous. I'm looking at my front office going, hey, are we sure? I don't mind going all in. I think going all in isn't a bad thing at all because you got to take your shot when you get your shot. But I do think you need to have some kind of backup plan, and they don't have one because they gave away the farm to get Paul George, and they can't restock the shelves. And they're not getting it, you know, Montrezl Harrell and Lou Williams and Pat Beverly, they're not getting any younger. They had a 2-year window and one half of it is gone and they didn't even make the conference finals.
What happens? Like I'm just coming up with crazy lunatic hypotheticals. And I would think losing Kawhi in any situation would hurt, but imagine the brow decides to leave LeBron and the Lakers and a year from now, Kawhi crosses the hall. I mean, there's a lot of ways this thing could go weird and sideways on the Clip. And then we just look at it and say, well, they're the Clippers.
They're paying for leaving Buffalo. I swear to God.
Or San Diego or where.
Yeah. I'm a Niagara Peninsula guy. The Buffalo thing hurts me badly.
Yes. That's
but maybe, you know, the Clippers are the Clippers. Something always happens. They've never played for a conference championship ever. That's unfathomable. Through Lob City, through the Chris Paul time, through all these Doc River years, they've never played for a conference final, let alone a championship, which is astounding to me because they've had a lot of good players.
Jamal Murray and the Nuggets now, do they have anything left in the tank, you think, moving forward, or is that just kind of the, you know, we had a great playoff and that's it?
you sure think they'd be mentally exhausted, but I guarantee you they're not. There's something about that group. I don't know what it is. You know, Jokic looks like me, and he's out there dropping triple doubles with 20 rebounds in a game. You know, he's not exactly a washboard abs kind of athlete, but he's out there getting you 20. He threw a over the head back pass up 20 in a closeout game. That's as cheeky as it gets, right there. But I think they got juice left in them. I really do, because they're playing with house money right now. Now they were playing house money when they beat Utah. So I think they're going to play free and easy, and there's an awful lot of pressure on the Lakers.
Doug, it's great to catch up. We appreciate the insight. Touched on a number of things in a condensed period of time. We'll have to have you back and look forward to it because we know there are some big decisions coming down the pipe with the Raps. Thanks for this.
Absolutely. Anytime, guys. My pleasure.
Doug Smith of the Toronto Star has been on the Raptors beat since day one.
I think what he was trying to say is that he doesn't have abs of steel. He has abs of veal. That's what he wanted to say.
I'm just going to let that breathe. Did you think of that just now? Or is that something you've said? I've never heard abs of steel versus abs of veal. I've never heard that. I've never heard that one. I think
where
there's
do you
a
fall, where do you fall under?
I think there's a, oh, I've got abs of veal right now. I want to win one of these Untuckit gift cards, dude, that we give away on All or Nothing, and I can't qualify. I'm getting close to the elastic waistband territory. I'm already wearing track pants. I'm pulling the Jerry Seinfeld. I've given up. I got to find some jeans or some jorts or some somethings with elastic waistbands. There's it's been an expansion at the equator in the last few months. Poor Kawhi, eh? Going back to California, leaving Florida. Maybe he doesn't love Florida.
Yeah, maybe not.
Jeez. I mean, I'm with you, but he's pissed he lost. He doesn't give a crap.
No, he doesn't care.
He doesn't give a crap about leaving Toronto. He didn't think the Raptors had enough to win. Well, maybe that was proven correct without him, but what was also proven correct is that he didn't have enough around him without the Raps to win either. So maybe both sides miss each other at this particular point.
That's a good way to sum it up, but I still think if he's with the Raptors, I think they're still playing right now.
They beat Boston. They do.
They beat Boston. They get to the finals. Sorry.
And Kawhi's playing probably an LA team, right? The Lakers with LeBron. Would have been a great show. Alternate universe. Yeah. Come up with alternate universe Wednesday. In an alternate universe, what would have happened? By the way, we still need to have our bet settled between now and the end of the show.
We will do it. So I have it written down right here.
Percentage, you think Derek Fisher is going to be in the starting lineup tonight? I think he won't be.
You say no?
I think he won't be.
Who do you think is going to come in?
I think they will play a position player short.
Go short?
Yeah.
Go with five infielders.
I'd have my center fielder and right center and my left fielder and left center. I say that in jest.
Five infielders.
Go with an extra infielder and throw Kevin Biggio out in the outfield. I'd go with that if that's what it takes.
Shuffle yesterday the one time. Remember when they all shuffled for that? I forget who was up, but that was pretty interesting.
Yeah. Sometimes you draw the infield in and the extra guy. I'd put Kevin Biggio out there tonight. Brian Burke, Jason Sobel, Adnan Verk in the 8 o'clock hour. Who the heck is playing and when for Great Canadian Meat next. Brian Burke, Jason Sobel tee up the U.S. Open Golf Tournament. Adnan Verk in the 8 o'clock hour here on Leadoff. Hugh Burrell into studio. Who the heck is playing and when?
Quiet night.
Quiet.
Yeah. Quiet. No NHL playoffs, no NBA playoffs tonight. We do have two baseball games on the network, though. 1 o'clock, we whet your appetite with the Nationals and Rays on Sportsnet. Then at 7, it's the big one. Jays and Yankees, game 2 of their series. Tanner Roark on the mound against Garrett Cole of the Yankees. 7 o'clock, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 1, and Sportsnet 590, the fan.
All right, so we've got Ziggy and I have to come up with the parameters of our bet. Ziggy thinks Derek Fisher will play tonight in the starting lineup. Pinch hitting later or whatever.
Okay.
I think he won't. Also, we have to come up with a side bet. Will Tanner Roark throw 100 or more pitches or less than 100 pitches in tonight's game? Remember, he griped last time, and the Blue Jays ate through their bullpen last night.
He's not throwing 100 pitches tonight.
He's throwing 100.
No way.
I'm going
yay. But I do believe 100. That Derek Fisher will be back in the lineup tonight.
You do?
I do. I think he had a rough night, and everybody knows it, especially him. I'm with Ziggy. I think he'd get him right back in there.
Hugh Burrell.
Yeah.
Three roses deep into the Four Roses bourbon. And it's not even.
And another thing.
8 o'clock in the morning.
Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere.
You never know when you get a good performance out of a guy like that. He has a bad one. You give him the ball again and they come and they got to redeem themselves.
Yep.
And he totally redeems himself. I can't wait to come in tomorrow.
Grand slam to win it, Zig. Bottom of the ninth.
He will be the loudest.
me and Lloyd Christmas.
Yeah.
And he totally redeems himself.
The loudest cheerleader in the dugout tonight will be Derek Fisher, and that will be how he redeems himself. Brian Burke on Dallas advancing to the Stanley Cup Final, and a special moment for Rick Bonus on the Islanders staying alive, and on Peter Laviolette, the new head coach in Washington, coming up. We'll settle this bet later in the hour. If Derek Fisher is in the starting lineup, Ziggy, you still got to come up with something. Silent Vic has given me my idea.
So what is it?
If Derek Fisher plays tonight in the starting lineup, I will drink a bottle of sheep kefir. That crap you were drinking yesterday, whatever that is. I will drink a bottle of that.
Kefir.
I was told it was kefir. I was told it was kefir. I'm going with kefir. My Twitter DMs don't lie. They don't lie. So you got an hour. You got less than an hour, 50 minutes or so to come up with your side of the bet. We'll brainstorm. We'll workshop. We'll kick it up to corporate.
We'll work on something.
Adnan Virk at 8:30. Jason Sobel of the SiriusXM PGA channel in about 12 minutes' time. We'll tee up the U.S. Open at Winged Foot in New York State, which gets underway tomorrow. Brian Burke of the NHL on Sportsnet, Hockey Night in Canada, is with us now to break down the NHL playoffs. Good morning, Berkey. How are you?
Morning, guys. I'm good.
Hang in for that one last night?
Yeah, I did. We did the game, and you get home late, and I can't sleep after I've worked, but
yeah.
But I have to go on with you guys, which I really, really look forward to. So yeah, right to bed.
And we could play a game of yay or nay. Does Berkey look forward to his Wednesday morning hits? Yay or nay? Nay. But the Islanders hang in, Brian. I mean, look, they only had 24 shots in, what, 4.5 or so periods of hockey, but it worked out. Barry Trotz's team won't go away.
Yeah, I don't think it's been a Picasso on either side of the league. There's been some low event games. There's been some great goaltending. The one thing is the hitting's been consistent in both leagues, and I would point that out to some people who are putting teams together that in the playoffs that sometimes matters. And I'm not. That's not a snide remark to the Leafs. I'm talking generally. This is what it turns into at this time of year. And I think the hockey's compelling and interesting. It's just not artistic.
How about the amount? Something else that sticks out to me, Berkey, is the amount of blocked shots. Are you surprised at that, or just is that just the playoff normal? And I'm just seeing things. I feel like guys are having a tough time getting the puck to net, especially in this series.
Yeah, I think both sides of the continent, really, Ziggy, I think now it's collapsing the coverage. It used to be if you watched a television close-up of an attacking, a power play, say, or a good scoring chance on a rebound up close, you might see three of the opposing team in the frame. And then it became four, and now it becomes five guys dropped to home plate. So you'll have the defenseman as low as the goal line, the two forwards between the goal line and the hash mark, and the center just above them. And it's if you've got three forwards in there and you've got five defenders in there, it's really hard to get the puck through. And the consensus is defend home plate will give up point shots, A, because our goalie can stop them, and B, because they're lower threat, and C, because they'll probably hit one of these guys anyhow. So it's become a science, getting pucks through and getting them through with any kind of authority. If you can do that, that's a gift. Like Shea Theodore is great at it, but if you can get it through with some authority, that's a gift.
Yeah, because Chris Johnson he tweeted out yesterday, Lightning Islanders have played more than 81 minutes tonight, and the shots on goal are 37-23 Tampa, and I was just... I was shocked at that number. Just you expect more, right? And I mean, analytically, it's tough to really analyze these games and figure out who's playing better. I mean, I don't know who you thought really controlled the playing last night, but I mean, Tampa Bay, I think, has dominated in a lot of areas. I mean, and they don't win. I think the other night, the Vegas dominated the game. Dallas wins. It's like the numbers don't always tell the story.
I love how you asked that, Ziggy. I don't know what you thought, Berkey, but they kind of dominated Tampa Bay last night. It's called leading the witness if you're in a courtroom.
He's a lawyer.
Mr. Burke, wouldn't you say? For sure, there is no God in hockey, right? There's no justice. Just because you do it right, Vegas did everything right. And when I say their big boys didn't get it done, they clearly didn't, but not for lack of effort. It's just Dallas figure out a way to win those games. I think they're the first team maybe ever to win with a negative goal differential to advance to a Stanley Cup final, and the conference finals to have a negative goal differential. So, like I say, these aren't Picassos, but they're not Peyton Barnes either. There's some good plays. There's lots of hitting. And block shot's kind of a cool play anyway, Ziggy. You were good at it. Yeah. And it's kind of a cool play, but it's not as cool as a goal, I'll agree. But I enjoyed the game last night, even though, again, low event, what we call a low event game, low number of scoring chances, low number of huge quality saves, but enough that I thought it was interesting. And the way these guys worked in the first and second overtime, like they've been playing every other day. There's no travel, which is a blessing, but these teams worked last night, and I enjoyed the game. I had people texting me saying this hockey's horrible, and I'm like, I don't know. I didn't mind it.
Mm-hmm.
We're with Brian Burke on leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan. There's not somebody in the hockey universe, Brian, who hasn't come across Rick Bowness. And I mean, the sense is that everybody just feels good for him. How well do you know Rick, and what do you think of this? I mean, 65 years old, hadn't been a head coach in more than 20 years. It's a great story.
Well, first off, that's not that old. Don't be obnoxious.
Very young and spry, 65 years old.
You should Google your audience or Google your guests before you get them on.
I'm leading the witness in exactly the wrong way.
When Bones was an assistant coach in Vancouver, and my wife and I were living in Newport Beach, we kept a townhouse in Vancouver, not far from the arena at all. You could walk there. And Bones rented that from us for the one season, and he still owes me $400. He messed up my satellite system. But I've known him for a long time. Everyone has. It's like I said on radio yesterday, he coached Abraham Lincoln. That's why so many people know him. That's how long he's been around. And so he's worked at it so long, and he's so well-liked and respected. Like, you can't put in that kind of time in the league and not cross paths with literally thousands and thousands of people, players, coaches, owners, GMs, and still be working unless you're a good guy. There's too many guys that could assassinate you along the way there. And that's not a Lincoln pun. I'm just saying there's too many pitfalls unless you're a really good person. So I think the proof is the longevity and the sincerity with which you see people greet him. Like, he'll be walking down the street and some guy will come up to him and say, I played for you 25 years ago. And this happens to me in airports, but with Bones probably daily. And universally liked, universally respected. I don't think there's anyone watching hockey now, even if you are truly a fan of one of the other teams, that doesn't cheer a little bit when they see Rick Bowness advance.
Speaking about coaching, I wanted to ask you about the Capitals hiring Laviolette. Well, your initial reaction, is that who you thought would get the job there?
Yes, I did. Peter Laviolette, I worked with him in Sochi with Team USA. So I have been up close and personal with him. And through the USA program, I've been friends with him much, much longer than that. When I had him in Sochi, first off, he's one of only four coaches to take three different teams to the finals. I'm pretty sure I got that right.
Mm-hmm.
He has a ring. He's coached numerous teams and made them all better. And again, like I say, three Stanley Cup Finals appearances. But what I watched in Sochi was, first off, he's a commanding presence. He's a big guy. You got to go back to Peter Laviolette. It's a great story. He played at Westfield State College. It's Division III. And for Canadian listeners, there is no Division II in hockey. There's D1 and D3. And the reason that is to be Division II, you've got to hold a national championship. There's all these requirements you have to meet that the hockey teams weren't interested in spending to meet. So back when he played, it was D1, D3. Westfield State. Anyone ever heard of it?
Nope. Where is it?
It's in Massachusetts.
Okay, Massachusetts. All right.
So he played a handful of NHL games and then had a lengthy, like a Jared Bednar, a lengthy minor league career, like a DJ Smith. These guys go down, learn, and then he starts coaching. Now, unlike those guys, his resume, he wasn't in the minors for a long time. He was such a good coach. He coached 1 year in the ECHL and then was promoted to Providence in the AHL, was there 1 year, 2 years, won coach of the year in the AHL, and was an assistant coach in the NHL. So this guy climbed the ladder way quicker than most of those guys. And he's been in the show now for over 20 years, coaching as a head coach in the NHL. So legit credentials, commanding presence. He's a big guy. He's a handsome guy. He's got a deep voice. You notice him on the bench. If you're a player, you hear him when he talks. But what I liked in Sochi was he had good rapport with the players. He worked at his rapport with the players. He didn't stay in the coach's office. He was out mingling with the players, and I liked his preparation. So, yeah, I think it's a good hire. I think it's a good fit.
Yeah, he's a great guy. I got to play for him in Carolina for a couple of years, and he squeezes everything out of you. Even myself, I at times you think you have nothing left to give, and he'll find a way, or you don't play. And, you know, you appreciate that as a player. The one thing I want to ask you about Washington is how do you think they came to this decision? Because you have a guy in Trotz, you have a guy that takes you there, does everything right, and you don't want to pay him his extension, but then you bring in another guy for, what is it, almost twice the money. Is that a thing where Washington maybe knew they needed a guy with more experience or they'd made a mistake?
Well, what I heard out of, and Todd Reardon was a finalist when we hired Glenn Gullitson in Calgary, so I got to spend some time with him. He's a good coach. And what I hear out of Washington at the time was it wasn't about that Todd Reardon didn't get the job done. It just wasn't a good fit, and maybe he wasn't hard enough. Maybe what they needed to get back to into that race and get back to the top of the mountain was a guy who pushed a little harder. So, but I didn't hear any criticism of Todd's coaching, just maybe his style wasn't demanding enough. And I think they need a guy who can cajole a little bit and befriend players and hug them and put his arm around them in between games and practices. But when they're out there on the ice, I think they want a driver. And that's mm-hmm. my definition of a good coach, by the way. Everyone talks mm-hmm. about we got to be nice to players, and it's a different guy, and it is. It's a different era. But when I hired a coach, I already told him the same thing. I don't want it to be fun during practice. I don't care if the players like it. The fun comes from getting 2 points and having a beer in your stall. That's fun. Mm-hmm. Getting 2 points, that's fun. You look in the dictionary, open up, it'll say getting 2 points where next to the word fun. So I didn't care if they liked the coach. I didn't care if the coach was fuzzy and happy and went to bought them cookies and milk. I wanted a taskmaster during practice and during the games. Bad language, hard on guys, the whole bit. And then I wanted a positive teaching environment the rest of the time. And the successful coach in this era, the millennial coach in this era, straddles that fence. He's hard when he needs to be, but he can be gentle when he has to be. And he makes the players feel welcome. But once they drop the puck, Ziggy, did you expect it to be fun or easy? Or?
No, not at all.
You think you're going to come off the ice and the coach is going to say, young man, I need you to put a little more effort into tonight's game. You get off, instead he's going to say, get your bleeping butt in gear.
With Brian Burke, last one for you, Berkey. And I thought you handled this wonderfully the other night on the air. There is a 17-year-old hockey player in Quebec,
Yannick
Duplessis, who has come out as gay, and he is going to play for the Drummondville Voltigeurs of the QMJHL. And, you know, for me personally, when I first saw this, I welled up, because for me at 17, that would have been 1996. This would have been unimaginable. This young man, whether he realizes it or not, he is a hero. And I'm just interested in a thought or two from you on Yannick and his decision to share his truth with the world.
Sure. So I talked to Philippe Boucher, who's the highly respected GM in Drummondville, just to see what the plans were. And I don't think he'll play for Drummondville this year, Yannick.
Okay.
Because they had a quarantine issue for training camp, he hurt his leg, and he had a family matter. So we'll look for this year. He's 17. We'll look for him to play next year. Philippe described him as an energy guy, a great kid, works hard. So this is the first page of a story that hopefully we get to watch for a long time. I think it took great courage. And, you know, my own son came out. It was a non-event in our household, but it was quite a thing. You know, it was a big story nationwide, and I went on national television with him. It is a difficult thing. Well, I talked a little bit about this on TV. when most of the gay people, the LGBTQ people that I've talked to, when you ask them about coming out, what they tell you is the difficulty, even if they're not worried about public perception, the difficulty for most kids is normally a close family member who they think will not accept them as gay. A mom or a dad is number one. An uncle, like their dad's brother who hates gay people, that's, you know, that close, or a sibling, number two. And so that's the pressure they feel more than outside. If you don't have that pressure, it's much easier. It's what I'm told. Again, not gay. I'm not trying to speak for the gay community, but certainly have been told this by enough people. So his own family, it was a non-event. And it should be a non-event. And so, like, when Brendan came out to us, it was a non-event. It wasn't like, oh, my God, what are we going to do? It's like, okay, Brendan. And I hugged him. I said, you've given us a million reasons to love you. This doesn't change one of them. So that's the attitude we need. Someday this will be a non-event. You know, Scotty, like, it shouldn't be a big event. It shouldn't be news. It should be a non-event, and we'll get there. But it's going to take some time. So good for Yannick Duplessis.
Yeah, and we wish him the very best. Thank you for this, Berkey, and we'll do it again next week.
Thanks, guys.
Brian Burke of the NHL on Sportsnet and Hockey Night in Canada. Should have asked him, yay or nay, will you be back next week? We'll have to give him a yay on that one. Whether he likes it or not. Jason Sobel is a prominent figure on SiriusXM's PGA Tour radio station, also with the Action Network, and he is here to help us tee up the U.S. Open, which gets underway tomorrow at Winged Foot. And, man, this course, this course has been a monster forever, and it looks like it's setting up to be a monster again this weekend. Jason, thank you for your time this morning. We appreciate it. If you were to project the winner's total come Sunday evening, what are we looking at here?
Good morning, guys. Yeah, as Tiger Woods mentioned in his press conference, and really every player that was in a press conference interview setting yesterday echoed the sentiment about how hard Wingfoot really is. It's one of these courses where they don't need to do a whole lot to have a U.S. Open there. They basically just show up, and it's going to be really hard. And so I'm looking at something right around what we saw in 2006, which was Jeff Ogilvy shooting four rounds over par, finishing at five over, and being the winner of the U.S. Open.
Tiger Woods is comparing it to Oakmont. How accurate do you think that comparison is?
Yeah, Dustin Johnson said the same thing, and he won at Oakmont. So I think there's a fair comparison, just a big, hard northeast. I mean, I guess Oakmont's sort of Midwest, but a just tough golf course in that sense. There's different kinds of courses. Wingfoot it has a lot more trees after Oakmont took out all the trees before the last U.S. Open, so it plays a bit differently. But just as far as the scale of difficulty, there are a whole lot more difficult. I mean, Tiger said it was basically Carnoustie, Oakmont, and Wingfoot as the hardest courses in the world, whatever order you want to put them.
Who are some of your favorites you think will come out, maybe a top five for this weekend?
Yeah, well, I've ranked them all. I can give you a top 144 this week if you'd like. I won't do that to you, but I've got Jon Rahm on top of my list. Jon Rahm is a guy who I know a lot of people say, well, he gets very emotional on the golf course and throws some temper tantrums that might not be good in the U.S. Open where you need patience. Guess what? There have been two really difficult golf tournaments so far on the PGA Tour this summer. Both of them played, I don't want to say like a major, but sort of a mini-major, the Memorial Tournament and the BMW Championship. The winner of both of those events was Jon Rahm. He's obviously playing difficult tournaments, difficult golf courses, difficult conditions, better than anybody else right now. And so I've got Jon Rahm atop my list. Other guys right up there, Xander Schauffele, who's been so good in majors, 12 career starts, 6 top 10 finishes. That's sort of unheard of to start off a career like that. He's still somehow underrated, but at some point he's gonna win one of these things. Matthew Fitzpatrick, another guy who plays really solid golf at tough golf tournaments in tough conditions. And then I'll round out that top five with Tony Finau and Tommy Fleetwood.
Jason Sobel is our guest from the Action Network and the SiriusXM PGA Tour radio station. This is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
One of your rankings I don't agree with is Tiger Woods at 30. I'm not quite sure what you were thinking there. You can get Jason Sobel on Twitter at Jason Sobel, T-A-N. But why is he so far down?
What a backhanded plug that is.
You think I haven't gotten enough hate tweets already in the last 24 hours?
Now you got Canada coming after you.
You're supposed to say, now, I would have respected a little bit more if you said, look, guys, Mackenzie Hughes, Corey Connors, Adam Hadwin, these guys are way too low on the list.
And all playing together. All playing together.
How about that? That's pretty cool. And I actually like, of the bunch, Hughes and Connors I really like a lot. Hadwin's been not playing his best golf over the past few months, but the other two guys I really like this week. So that's my way of changing the subject so I won't get all that hate mail.
There you go.
Yeah, I was going to go there next with the Canadians and what kind of odds are there on them winning or finishing high? Who do you like out of the three?
Yeah, I don't have the odds in front of me right now. Connors and Hughes have to be pretty close to each other, I would think. Hughes, just based on his recent performances, might have a little bit lower odds. It's a tough one, and it comes down to, look, Corey Connors is a tremendous ball striker. I would love to put together Corey Connors and Mackenzie Hughes. A little two-man scramble. Connors, great ball striker. Mackenzie Hughes is one of the best putters, especially on fast greens. And, oh, by the way, these greens are kind of fast this week. So mm-hmm. I like both of them. I think I've got Hughes ranked just a little bit higher than Connors in my ranking, but I could see that one going either way.
Jason, we're right up against the clock. Wish we had a little more time. We appreciate the insight, and we'll call on you again very soon, maybe for even a recap next week. Thank you, my friend.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys. We'll figure out whether you thought Tiger was too high or too low.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, let's just hope he gets through it unscathed. I mean, that's one of those.
Yeah.
If he's spraying his, Ziggy, if he's spraying his driver and he's got to go into that rough,
it's over. If his driver's on, he's going to be dangerous. I just think him on the greens he separates himself from a lot of the field. So he's the most interesting guy when he's in contention. The ratings must be double
needle mover, just, man.
Yeah. And he still is at his age. It's not that he's old, but if in the golf world, he's getting up there.
Yeah. 44, 45 is not old.
No.
At my
age. It's up there, though.
I was still 22. I'd probably think mid-40s was old. But since I'm knocking on mid-40s door, suddenly it's young.
That can go in a shirt. 40 is up there.
Yeah, 40 is up there. And Ottawa is north of Toronto. Adnan Virk from MLB Network, the NHL Network, the GM Shuffle Podcast. We got to figure out how we're going to itemize all these things. The state of the Blue Jays. Thoughts on week one in the NFL and Kawhi. Is he going to get no regrets tattooed across his chest? Or maybe he has regrets. Adnan Virk next. Adnan Virk is with us of the NHL Network, MLB Network, and the GM Shuffle Podcast. But Ziggy, just give Adnan and me 30 seconds. We've got to sort of console each other. 49ers and Eagles, Adnan, what's like? I just can't. I'm just not able to right now.
It's interesting. The Cardinals, I think, Scotty, could be one of the more intriguing teams this entire year. And I think that NFC West, which you guys are in, is an absolute bear. I mean, honestly, I think it's funny, when the Rams signed Jalen Ramsey, that five-year, $105 million deal, I said, great, $21 million for a tremendous quarterback. You're going to finish third in the division. Because I have it as Seattle, San Francisco, the Rams, and the Cardinals. And the Cardinals could be like a 7-9 team. Like, I mean, somebody has to be below 500, I would think, theoretically. But, I mean, all four of those teams are good. Cardinals are exciting, obviously, with Kingsbury as a head coach. You can always do things with offenses And Murray, will he take the next step in his maturation? It's all a downside for you. Our friend Michael Lombardi was telling me on the GM Shuffle, he doesn't think the Niners' defense is as strong as a season ago, particularly the secondary. I don't know if you share that sentiment.
Well, there's that, and then they've got DeForest Buckner's in Indianapolis, and that's a huge part. Now, they do still have a good pass rush with Bosa and Eric Armstead, et cetera, but I think the Buckner trade is the short-term pain for longer-term gain in a cap world. Like, DeForest Buckner's a 49er if there's no salary cap.
Right, and I think that what happens is that, you know, especially this offseason, as we've discussed, with no preseason, you're kind of hitting the ground running. So, like, if you haven't watched or paid attention, I should say, to all the transactions and moves, you're like, oh, Niners, incredible defense. Yep, Jimmy G kind of let them down in the Super Bowl, but they got an unbelievable defense. And you watch the game, you go, oh, wait, what happened? Oh, that's right. DeForest Buckner's gone now. Maybe the defense is not going to be Robert Saleh puffing his chest every 2 minutes because it's a different story this year.
All right, well, so in a stunning development, Adnan, you and I have made the 49ers the lead, which I greatly appreciate. But in this market, there are only a handful of people who are as obsessed with the 49ers as me. So we'll pivot. And, I mean, let's start with Kawhi and the clip. If I'm Steve Ballmer, I'm looking at this going, I just traded the farm for Paul George, and now I've got Kawhi and George a year away from potential free agency. This is getting into uncertain. I mean, you take a risk. I would imagine Ballmer knew that. But now the play on that risk becomes a little more worrisome.
Absolutely. And I mean, listen, it goes back to show you just how incredible Masai did. Because with the Raptors, it was like, it was easy to criticize. I remember I was on ESPN's Get Up arguing with Richard Jefferson, former NBA player. And he was like, God, this is a terrible trade. Like, in the NBA, it just doesn't work. One and done. Kawhi's going to go to Toronto. There's no way he's staying. DeRozan's a good player. I'm like, you know what, dude? Like, just why not? Like, DeRozan is a good player, but he's flawed. He's had playoff issues. Isn't great defensively. And Jefferson's arguing with me. Like, no, Kawhi. I said, he's great defensively. He said, nah, he's good defensively. But I'm telling you, man, a lot of that was playing with Pop. A lot of that was that system. And, of course, it worked out to, obviously, Toronto's great benefit. And it's exactly what you wanted. All right, fine. One and done. We got the one championship. Kawhi moves on. But I never forgot what Jefferson told me, which is that, yeah, Kawhi's a stud, but he's not necessarily a guy that's going to lead your team. And I think he shed that label because of the championship. But maybe you say, well, a lot of that was Kyle Lowry. And we should spread the love around. It shouldn't just be the headline of Kawhi delivers title. It was an entire team, a collective effort, and so on. And for the Clippers specifically, I mean, those stats last night, 49 years without making a conference final. I mean, that's crazy. And you're investing big time, as you said, in those two guys. And if you can't get it done, it's one thing, Scotty and Ziggy, to lose a game seven. Totally get that. But the way that they lost, I mean, I was flipping back and forth with that in the Islanders game. Thankfully, the Yankees game with Blue Jays, it was a rout, so at least we could just discount it from the viewing because it was just too much other good stuff to watch. But Jamal Murray putting up 25, 20 in the second quarter, and the way that Denver just put it on them in the third quarter and just pulled away, again, it's one thing to lose. You shouldn't lose by 15 in a game seven. And Doc Rivers should take some blame. How about that graph? The third time he's blown a 3-1 lead, like in a critical spot. So it's definitely a head-scratcher for the Clippers. I think all of us have penciled in, yeah, Clippers, Lakers, Battle of L.A., cue up the Rage Against the Machine. And instead, Denver spoils the party.
There was a great tweet by a prominent member of Leafs Twitter who I follow, Juno, at Juno the Leafs. And he said, Kawhi went with a doc when what he really needed was a nurse. That's Twitter at its best. That's Twitter.
Oh, that's fit.
That's Twitter. That's Twitter at its best.
Yeah,
I'm gonna retweet that. That's
you bet.
It was just I mean, everyone up, you know, get up this morning. And it's the Raptors couldn't win without Kawhi, and Kawhi can't win without the Raptors. I just think it was a good mix, Kawhi, with this team, and it's unfortunate that he didn't come back. But what do you think the Clippers do moving forward now? I mean, they're in a tough spot, are they not?
Yeah, there's not too much you can do, Ziggy. You paid all that money to those horses. You can make some supplemental moves, but you're gonna live and die with Kawhi Leonard and Paul George. I haven't looked specifically as far as NBA free agents, but normally we would know the names, right? If it was a big name out there, it's okay, wait till this guy's a free agent. This year's just been so wacky. It's like, oh my God, let's just get this bubble, get the season done. I know Woj was tweeting the draft is going to be November 18th. Maybe the Clippers can get some of the draft. But of course, when you play so well, you're not going to have a good draft position. So I haven't looked specifically at what they can do, but I know their cap situation, it's front loaded and it's top heavy with those guys. So I think you just say, listen, there's only so much we can do. Tinker and tweet, maybe make a supplemental move. Let's just believe that Kawhi and Paul will get it done. A lot of teams are going to take a mulligan and say, listen, it was a weird year. This pandemic affected everybody. Excuses or not, it certainly had everybody out of their comfort zone. Let's just reassess next year. But, I mean, obviously, I saw Magic Johnson speaking of tweets trolling the Clippers, and this will always be a Lakers town, Los Angeles. So at least for another year, Magic's right.
With that, Nan Verk, this is Leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. So you've got a weird pandemic-induced cap situation with the NBA. You've got Giannis's impending free agency. Nick Nurse has just signed a contract extension to remain the head coach. Our friend Doug Smith of the Toronto Star was on last hour and believes that the Raptors will eventually get something done on the longer term with Masai, who's got a year left on his deal. All of that factoring in, Adnan, what would you do with impending free agent Fred VanVleet? Do you go short and big money? Do you try to lock him in on a longer term? What makes sense?
I like that you gave me options, because that's what I'd be doing if I was Masai and company. It's okay. Let's not just get hemmed into one sort of thinking here, because yes, he's a really good point guard. At times he's a starter, at times he's a combo guard, at times he's a backup to Lowry. I mean, you can use him in different ways, but I think if you watch a lot of the Raptors this year, as we all did, you'd say, yeah, Siakam, Lowry, VanVleet, those guys are really critical to this team. And Ananobi as well, you throw him in there. Gasol obviously isn't the guy he once was. So Vleet is certainly a core member of the team. But I would be a little hesitant to give him like a long-term deal, because he hasn't proven it to me for as long as some of those other guys. So I would like to go short-term, big money. Hopefully that would appease him. If I can get a three-year deal done, maybe a four-year deal done, that would make me quite happy. He's not going to take a two-year. None of these guys are going to take 2 years. I think if you can get 3 years or 4 years of good money, VanVleet would be happy. Like I said, he can do a lot of things offensively. He's instant offense in many ways. When the Raptors were clicking, VanVleet was a big part of their success. I don't want to see him go anywhere, but I don't want to give him a lot of term either. So the big one, as you said, is let's get Masai taken care of. He's still got a year to go. Sign up VanVleet. Short-term, big money. And I think both sides would be happy.
On to the NHL now. Islanders force a game 6 against the Lightning. Do they have enough to pull this one off and, you know, force a game 7 and get onto the finals?
Ziggy, I'm trying this intermittent fasting nonsense because we've been trying for 20 years to lose the same 20 pounds. So the thought is from 12 to 8 is the only time you can eat. But what I've been told is you can fairly have at it. I mean, I think we'll get to a point where we try to limit some carbs. But they tell me, listen, 12 to 8, just go, but you got to shut it down after 8. This is all a way of saying yesterday was day 2. We start out well. It's easy to skip breakfast, and it's easy just to go wild at 12. But after 8, when we're watching sports as we are, it's hard not to munch. I'm locked into – I watched, you know, first few innings of the Jays, Yankees. All right, Jays getting obliterated, moving on. Watched some of the Nuggets game back and forth. I'm watching the Islanders. Ziggy, it got to midnight, and I said, listen, this is going 4 OTs. I was convinced. I said, this is Pat LaFontaine in 87. We're just going to have to shelve the diet and just go ahead and have a couple snacks. I literally went upstairs, snack. I come downstairs. Oh, what a goal, Jordan Eberle, who, of course, we've seen so many great moments for Team Canada over the years. So I'm an idiot. I should have realized the Islanders were about to score, but it was a fun game to watch. And what was crazy about it was this, the Islanders had so few shots on goal. Like, I remember looking up at one point and I said, maybe I'm just getting drowsy, but how is there only 21 shots on goal the Islanders have and we're in double overtime? But I give them credit. The Lightning, I think, are going to win this in 6. They've got the better goalie in Vasilevsky. But how about Varlamov's celebration? That was my favorite moment of last night. The Islanders with a double OT. And he goes down to the head first slide. That was so cool to see. Listen, I like the team. I like their pluckiness. But I just think Tampa is too much offensively. But you see the difference without Stamkos, without Point. Like, after a while, it does catch up to you. But the fact that the Islanders have at least pushed it, I'm always a fan of seeing as much hockey as possible. So nice win for them. I mean, listen, that play, and you've seen it so many times, Ziggy, Shattenkirk, just broken stick, you whiff on it, boom. 2-on-1, they were so opportunistic the other way. Anders Lee threads the needle, what a pass. I mean, every defenseman is taught on the 2-on-1, just take away the pass. He wasn't able to take away the pass, and therefore, perfect pass to Eberle, he buries it. I think the Lightning win in six, but a really nice win and a really nice story for the Islanders. I just love seeing all these old graphics, right? They haven't done this since 93, and you get to mention Stumpy Thomas, and obviously you would go back to the 80s Islanders as well. They mentioned them as well. I mean, especially with the defense. They were talking about Pulak, and that, you know, he's been the only guy who's been this offensive for the Islanders since Dennis Potvin back in 83. So it's been a good nostalgic trip, certainly for Islanders fans.
Who's your Conn Smythe favorite at this point in the playoffs?
It's a great question. I'm probably going to go Vasilevsky because I think the Lightning are going to win it all, and I think he's the best goalie in the game. All apologies to Carey Price. But the guy I really was pulling for, Ziggy, was Nathan MacKinnon, because if the Avalanche had actually gotten through, I said, listen, what he's doing right now, you can start to make an argument that he's as good as Connor McDavid, best player in the game, blah, blah, blah. But right now, I'd probably go with Vasilevsky because these games have been so low scoring. I mean, aside from that game one, which is such an aberration, when the Lightning won 8-2, to me, Vasilevsky's a guy who's just never going to give up a bad goal, and he's always going to stand tall when need be. So I would be the safe pick and go with the goalie.
With Adnan Virk on leadoff, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Do you know what sheep kefir is?
Sheep kefir?
Yeah.
You stumped me, Scotty, here on a Wednesday morning. So, I like to pride myself as a master of linguistics,
my
but I have no idea.
Co-host is...
He's pronouncing it the wrong way,
a dietary lunatic.
Okay.
It is a sheep extract that looks like milk, and Ziggy was drinking this yesterday morning, and he's on FaceTime.
Kefir.
It's not
kefir.
Somebody told me it was kefir. It's kefir. Okay, does that help? Do you know what sheep kefir is?
Oh, yeah. You know what? Now
does
that
make
it
better?
Well aware
does that make it better? Yeah. No, of course it doesn't. Know. Nobody knows what sheep kefir, whatever is. Anyway, we have made a bet that if Derek Fisher is in the Blue Jays starting lineup tonight, I have to drink sheep kefir kefir tomorrow. And we're still trying to come up with Ziggy's end of the bet if Derek Fisher is not in the starting lineup tonight. I don't think he will be. Ziggy actually thinks that Fisher will play tonight in the starting lineup. Charlie Montoyo can't possibly put this guy back in right field tonight.
No, I love the fact that sheep kefir is a part of it, by the way. That is hysterical to me.
Yeah.
Because I do think it's nice to put your money where your mouth is. It's too easy just to put some money on it. I don't know. We're going to get some sheep kefir and try to upset some people's digestive systems. But it's interesting. Watching that game last night, at least the first few innings, I was laughing at your tweets as I call them up now.
Oh.
Derek Fisher is very glad the bleacher creatures aren't in the stadium. Now we need to discuss Walker having a nuclear meltdown. Fisher let him down twice. I let Fisher lead off top of the third, not here to embarrass him. And I send someone else to right field the bottom of the third. I would describe this game's watchability level as difficult.
So I become that guy during the pennant chase, okay, Adnan? Just so you're warned.
This is just atrocious. It's not just about tonight. There are a lot of games and no days off between now and Sunday the 27th.
I don't want them to blow their bullpen up.
Oh, I was watching three games, and I was following Scotty Mack Thinks avidly on Twitter, and that was my entertainment for the night.
Well, there's more coming, pal. I can promise you that.
It was atrocious. Listen, there's no question about it, but that is the beauty of baseball. You get drilled 20-6. You go, okay, well, better luck next time. The fear is the Yankees are now getting hot at the worst possible time. Five straight wins. Voit leads the majors in home runs. Stanton obviously went 0-for-4, but he's back fine. He missed 32 games. Aaron Judge should be back Wednesday or Thursday. This was the fear for Toronto. It was like, listen, make up ground right now, get ahead of the Yankees, and get a nice building lead because you're going to face each other seven more games head-to-head. They're facing each other now in the Bronx, going to play in Buffalo next week. But, hey, one bad loss, but you're right. Fisher was atrocious. That was tough to watch.
Dan from Georgetown says, what about Ziggy in a leopard print banana hammock if – Derek Fisher.
How about I do?
How about I change the topic, says Ziggy.
Yeah, it's like, oh my gosh, come on.
Leopard print we save for something major. Like, you know, if the Jays make a deep playoff run, Derek Fisher shows up.
Game 5
of the ALCS, then Ziggy's
That's
home.
A little deep.
Well, we'll let you know what it is, Adnan. In fact, we're going to tweet out the bet here by the end of the show because Ziggy's got to come up with his end of the bargain. So be looking for that. We'll catch up next week, and the Niners and Eagles will be 1-1 when we talk a week today. Let's count on it.
I love the optimism, man. Eagles offensive line awfully depleted, but you can't do much worse than blowing a 17-point lead.
Well, the Niners are visiting the Jets on Sunday, so if they don't win that game, It's tough to do radio when you're despondent and unable to speak. And that will be about where I'm at.
Yeah.
Always fun to chat. Thanks, pal.
Thanks, boys. Here's the inconsolable Scott MacArthur next.
Adnan Virk of the NHL Network, MLB Network, and the GM Shuffle podcast. We'll get Hugh into studio. You need to come up with your
end of
the bargain.
I already know what it's going to be. It's similar to yours. It's nothing special, but it's going to be similar to yours.
We will announce it next. The Iron Sheik has weighed in on the Kawhi situation on Twitter. If the Kawhi stayed on the Toronto, be better than this jabroni garbage.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Stay in school, kids.
Hugh, you've got an idea for Ziggy's
I do.
No, I
side of the
already.
Bet.
No.
Quick, whatever. Quick.
Okay.
I'm not doing it.
You're such a health nut that if you lose this bet, you've got to eat a heaping tray of Taco Bell.
I actually do not mind Taco Bell.
It's very, very good, actually. I love it.
It's all right, 12 hours that. Before okay. a colonoscopy,
he
too.
I was going to say I'll do the cow kefir because I would never drink cow kefir,
no,
ever.
No, you're
I
not
just
allowed.
Do the sheep.
Okay,
but I was going to do the cow.
Okay, so here's the bet. If Derek Fisher is in the starting lineup tonight, I have to drink this sheep kefir or kefir that you had yesterday, this milky-looking
yogurt, milk, something.
What do you, so if Derek Fisher is not in the starting lineup, because I believe he will not be, you have to do what?
I thought we said I'm doing Taco Bell.
Yes.
Well, that was Hugh's idea. You said you
had it. It was a good idea.
No.
Are you going to do Taco Bell?
I'll do Taco Bell.
And you have to video it, because we need video proof.
Tiquero Taco Bell. Isn't that the commercial?
Tiquero Taco Bell.
I like it. Run for the border. That was the old ad, right?
Yeah.
I remember
AFC
that.
AFC Offensive Player of the Week. 20 for 25 completions, 285 passing yards, 3 passing touchdowns, 152 rating. Lamar Jackson.
Oh, right. Yeah, the Ravens fan.
Trust, baby. Yeah.
Ravens fan since way back. Since way back a couple of weeks ago.
Guys, I have two jerseys. One of them's Steelers. One of them's Ravens.
Oh, good. So you've got half the AFC North covered.
Yeah.
Get a Baker Mayfield and a Joe Burrows and you're good.
Twist your ankle jumping onto the bandwagon.
A 705 number says sheep kefir is what my fiance gives to our golden retrievers every morning. Henry is not a fan. Good luck. We will leave it there back at 6 o'clock tomorrow morning. Good show's next.